Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Chris Marisiewicz, sitting in for Stan Jastrzewski. My guest this week, speaking by phone from his office, is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Thanks for being with us.
Chris, it's great to be with you today. Happy to be on the program.
And you can call in your questions at 765-496-1999, or on Twitter, you can tweet a question to @WBAA News. First of all, you've had some major announcements this month in your city, and I think on Monday, the Utility Service Board announced the selection of Todd Corey, who's no stranger to city government, as the general manager for the city electric, water, and wastewater treatment utilities. So why does Frankfort need a general manager to oversee all of those utilities?
Well, Chris, great question. We have had several major announcements these past couple weeks, and I believe they are defining announcements. It's all due to great teamwork. People are rolling up our sleeves, and we're expecting more, a higher standard in our community. And I believe these new structures that are being put in place will outlive even me as a 29-year-old, and that's the hope here. But I believe it's really critically important that all of our utilities are financially sound and they operate efficiently and effectively, and that's no small task, but I believe it's one best accomplished under the leadership and the guidance of a single knowledgeable point person reporting to and working in collaboration with the Utility Service Board. Up to this point in time, that task has been put on five individuals, three appointed by myself and two appointed by the City Council, and I believe that board, it needs to be an oversight board, not a managerial board. Much like myself with my Board of Works, I interact with our department heads every day. I work with them on initiatives, and then I am the one fluid communication piece that takes that information back and forth, and of course then everything is voted on in a public meeting. So that same structure is going to parallel itself on the utility side, and I believe allow that board to continue their work and even be more efficient in what they're doing. And really, the situation with Todd, Chris, I consider it a black swan event. It is not typical, but Todd, with his background, he not only is an electrical engineer, a graduate of Purdue University, but also he's ran a multi-million-dollar company here locally with the CAECO for over the past decade. So he gets it. He understands how to run a business, how to cut waste, how to run things efficiently, and always focus on that bottom line, really to the best of his ability. And, you know, one of his first announcements this past Monday, even before he's starting this position, his official start time is next Monday, he proposed to the council to come in and completely repeal and slash capacity fees and tap fees for new users that are wanting to develop Frankfort. And we heard from one small business owner who is developing a Jimmy John's on the west side of our city, and he basically approached the council in the USB on Monday night, and he said, hey, if I knew about these capacity fees and these tap fees, I never would have chosen to expand this investment in Frankfort. Todd rolled up his sleeves, he went to work, and now we're repealing those. So I think he's going to bring pro-development policies to this position, run our utilities like a business, interact with our industrial leaders, our business leaders. He's been there, he's done that, and it's going to be a great thing for our general municipal utilities moving forward.
So does he report to the Utilities Service Board and not
Yes.
to the mayor's office?
Correct, yes. He reports to the Utility Service Board. I will have no direct oversight. So as I mentioned earlier, our Utility Service Board is set up through city ordinance. Three of those individuals are appointed by myself. Okay. Two of those individuals are appointed by our city council. So you could say that the mayor's office and the city council, we work in an arm's length transaction with that Utility Service Board. So Mr. Corey will be the go-between between the utility superintendents and the Utility Service Board. And it's important to note that over the past couple months, our Utility Service Board, through attrition, has done some consolidating. They have moved our wastewater treatment superintendent to oversee not only that utility, but our water plant. Our electric superintendent retired, so that is giving us the opportunity to move up our assistant superintendent, and we will not refill that assistant superintendent position. So we've consolidated some positions, realized some savings there, and the board is turning those savings around and investing into an individual that I believe he's going to pay for himself over and over again as he finds more efficiencies and creates pro-development policies for our city.
Well, I find it interesting that he's cutting, eliminating the tap fees, which are fees that a lot of cities rely on to pay for that infrastructure and generate money to expand the infrastructure so they can accommodate new business.
It's definitely a balancing act, Chris, and you bring up a good point. You know, I think communities across the state, whether you call them tap fees, capacity fees, some communities call them development fees, it's just an additional burden on small businesses and industry. And the idea is the more investment we can bring into our community, the higher that we can increase our utility capacity and our overall users of those utilities, the more stable we're going to be able to keep our rates for all ratepayers in our community. And when we study these capacity fees, they've been in place for over a decade, and I believe the amount of money brought in from the beginning is just over $100,000. So for a $40 million operation on an annual basis, which is what our utilities are, you know, a little over $100,000 in the grand scheme of things, I think it's hurt us more than it's helped us. And I've heard time and time again that these capacity fees are amongst the highest in the state. They are really eye-popping numbers. So to come in right away and peel that back and say, you know what, we are going to charge for time and labor and material, so we're going to cover our costs, but we're not going to go above and beyond that just for the sake of padding our utilities. We're not going to do that. We want to be pro-development. We want to let businesses know, because we understand that utilities are a huge overhead. We want you to know if you're going to come here, we're going to do everything we can to help make you successful.
And while we're talking about utilities, what's the status of the city's electric rate increase request that's pending before the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission?
We have gone back and forth with the OUCC dozens of times, and I believe it will be announced very soon, if it hasn't already been publicly by the OUCC, that they are agreeing with our requests. Here's the thing. Over the past 20 years, we have not had an adjustment. The last adjustment that we've had was actually a decrease. So this is a modest increase. No one likes to do this. We don't get in the business of doing this, but I feel overall it's protecting our utilities. Even with these modest adjustments, we are still going to be at some of the lowest rates in terms of those levels here in this area and of communities of similar size. I also asked for a comparison of what our current industries are paying through our municipal utilities in comparison to their sister and brother plants across the country, because I want to keep those individuals competitive. And I'm happy to report I've looked at those numbers. And from an industrial standpoint, we'll be pretty much right in the middle of the pack. And we hope to make up for that through the workforce opportunities that we're going to present new industries that come here, along with our tax rate structure and our ability to react to their needs very quickly, being a well-oiled machine and a team. So it's going to be a good thing, and it's going to allow us to better our electric infrastructure so we can provide reliable service to our users.
At the same time, I was looking at the case online, and it looked like the Office of Utility Consumer Counselor had asked some questions and asked for a revised cost of service study. So what were the concerns, and what additional information was the OUCC looking for before the rate case moved forward?
Sure, good question. There was a little bit of confusion, and it kind of centered around our superintendent decided to retire at the first of this year to move on to another opportunity. So when that individual left, we were left without someone in that position to really get the OUCC the information they needed. So we had to react very quickly. Our utility service board buckled down. I believe some of those requests revolved around the ongoing overhead expenses of of our utilities regarding labor, insurance costs over the past 10 years. I know that information was provided, and I thank our Utility Service Board for stepping up in really the absence of having a superintendent. We were able to provide that information. And again, I believe the OUCC is going to look at this situation and understand that what we're asking for is fair to everyone involved. They also held a public hearing at our local middle school a couple of months ago to give local ratepayers the opportunity to voice their concerns. And I do want to spread the message, Chris. Anyone out there that looks at their bill here over the next couple months, I've already fielded a couple of these calls, and they're wondering why the charges are coming from where they're coming from. Please call my office, and we can also sit down with those individuals to make sure they are indeed in the proper rate class, they're being billed properly. We also have contacts through IMPA. We are an IMPA community to talk to people how they can make their homes more energy efficient to save on costs. And then if there's any elderly individuals out there that truly are struggling to no fault of their own, we do have resources, whether it be through our Center Township Trustee or Area 4 Agency, which is actually, we're very blessed, that's here in Old Stoney, that we can direct them to resources to get them the help they need.
Okay. And while we're on the topic of new managers, you hired a new human resources director last month. And so this makes me wonder, you know, in your second term as mayor, are you seeing something in the city operations that prompts you to make these key personnel changes? What's at work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you get in as mayor and you're drinking out of a fire hose, and I think any mayor will tell you that. And I've really had time to step back, Chris, and look at the overall functioning of our city. And yeah, being a mayor, it's very important to bring new industry in, to bring new investment in, and we have, and we've made those announcements. We've created hundreds of good-paying jobs, net new jobs for the community, but it's also important to look at the overall function of your organization to make sure that you're fundamentally doing things right every day. The new municipal utilities manager is a step in the right direction for that. Also, a glaring hole that I witnessed, Chris, and I wasn't the only one. Our city council saw this as well, and it was really just the right leaders being around the table at the right period of time. In today's day and age, we want to provide all of the accesses and resources to our employees that we can. The greatest asset that any municipality or county or organization has is their employees. And if you're not taking care of them, if you're not doing everything you can do to not only protect your organization, but the employee, you're not doing your job. And in the 21st century, there's so many regulations, there's so many rules with the Affordable Care Act, things of this nature, that we really needed a qualified, educated HR director that we can go to, that we can get questions answered very swiftly and effectively for our employees, and can also help with strengthening things like our employee manual, our job descriptions, data for our city council during budget session to make sure that we're paying our employees a competitive wage for what they do. And we found an individual in Jack Dodd. We interviewed about four people. We had several applications, and he's just a wonderful man. He's come in. He's reorganizing that department. He's building it from the ground up, providing resources that our employees need. And it's just another tool to bring Frankfort into the modern era. And yes, we are a small town, but I want us to have a big city sophistication, and those two positions are going to help us do that.
Okay, in terms of economic development, job creation, and quality of life, NTK Precision Axle Corporation announced that it's going to build a new manufacturing facility in Anderson and invest more than $100 million there and create about 200 new jobs in the next 5 years. NTK already has a plant in Frankfort and Clinton County. Did NTK contact you or any of the Clinton County leaders as it was planning for this expansion?
Yes, they did. And I want to congratulate NTK on their announcement. I certainly respect their decision. They've been great corporate citizens. And, you know, here's what it comes down to, Chris. And not only I think it hurt us with this particular situation, but it's hurting us with other situations, is the amount of workforce that we have readily available in Frankfort. This is a real serious issue, and with SIA growing by leaps and bounds, Industries like GE, Nanshan, West Lafayette, and Lafayette are making, it seems on a monthly basis, great economic development announcements. Here we've had ConAgra, Wabash National, Indiana Packers, NHK is exploding in our own industrial park. I'm constantly asked, Mayor, love your city. Your infrastructure's getting better. Your tax rate's good. Your utility rate's competitive. Where are we going to find the workers? That and I think that is the biggest obstacle that not only Frankfort has, but our region has. And that's why the announcement last week, another major announcement we made, is we're bringing a $7 million market rate housing development to our historic downtown core. Chic lofts in a new historical building in our downtown that's going to be new construction, but it's going to have that historical feel to it. We need living opportunities, and we need quality of place initiatives to draw more people to Frankfort and Clinton County to live. I believe if we attract people, we will attract jobs. We will attract expansions. We have Ivy Tech Community College here. We have a great technical studies program in our local high school in Frankfort. But we've got to get more families to move to Frankfort. And one of the top things they look at is not only the safety of your community, but housing opportunities. And I can tell you, as a young person, I'm a newlywed of 2 years, you know, opportunities like downtown living opportunities are things that millennials are looking for, younger generations are looking for. They don't want a house from 1913 to take care of. They don't necessarily want a big yard. They want to be able to spend time with their loved ones, visit their friends, and have low-maintenance, modern living opportunities. And that's what Nickel Plate Flats is going to bring to our downtown. And that's economic development in the 21st century, and a reason why I'm so excited about that as we move forward here. I think it's going to be a great step in the right direction to make sure that future expansions, we have the workforce here in Frankfort to support those expansions.
You beat me to that. That was my next topic. But let me go back for a moment to NTK Precision Axle. Do you feel like your economic incentives then were competitive to whatever package Anderson offered, but it was primarily their concerns? Did they communicate to you it was concerns about the number of workers available in Clinton County?
Absolutely. I think I can say on air confidently today that that was probably the single biggest factor in their decision making. You know, we get very competitive when it comes to economic development incentives. And here in Frankfort, since 2012, I introduced a redevelopment commission. We have a re-energized economic development commission. We have a very aggressive LEADO in Shan Sheridan, which I'm a big supporter of. Shan and I and the council and our community leadership, we've had some big wins over the past few years. So we have those cutting-edge tools at our disposal, and I think industries know that, and we communicate that to industries. But again, I think it was that you look at our region, and we've got to increase the able-bodied individuals that we have in our workforce, and I think that's one of the biggest hindrances, not only to Frankfort but to our region, and a reason why, you know, people might set back and they might say, "Wow, what a waste of money! You're building another park. Wow, what a waste of money! Another trail or a downtown housing development." But you know, for people to know the situation that we face, unless we attract more people to live here and make a livable community, the less opportunities we will have to create good-paying jobs in our community. And that's a reason why here in Frankfort we're being so aggressive with those opportunities right now.
Well, and so understanding that training the workforce is a solution, the large part of the solution to this situation, you know, how quickly can you get this ramped up before the next company there says we might have to expand somewhere else? I mean, how concerning is this situation?
It's priority number one, right there along with public safety. And that's why, you know, and in local communities it takes time, just like with the HR director's position or the municipal utilities director position. You know, things take time to transpire, and that's just how government works. It's a beautiful system, but it's a very messy system, and it's a very slow system. It's slow here on the local level, and that's why when I watch the news, what goes on in Washington, D.C., I can only imagine how slow things move there. And it's so everyone can vet and have conversations. And, you know, this has been a progression over the past 6 years in our city, but we're finally, we have an able-bodied redevelopment commission that understands the positions. Those funds are growing, so they have the ability to invest in streetscapes in our downtown. The announcement with the Nickel Plate Flats last week, you know, who would have ever thought that a private company with private funds would be wanting to invest $7 million in our downtown core? That's incredible. So I think what I can say right now is definitively that we're moving forward, that we have a downtown revitalization plan that's been adopted by our council and our plan commission, that now we're aggressively implementing that plan. And the way we're communicating this to the region, I believe industries, they can't help but see what we're doing. They can't help but see that progress is coming. And I serve on the Greater Lafayette Commerce Board as well. I want to connect Frankfort to different cities in this region. We've got to work together to solve these issues, and that's what I can tell prospective industries, that we are playing not on our heels, but we're playing the game on the balls of our feet. We're competing, and over the next decade, we're going to have solutions to this issue.
Well, and so how did the Nickel Plate Flats come about? Did they approach the city? And also, the city council this week supported a tax abatement for the project. So what incentives did the city offer the developers once the developers approached the city?
Sure. Great question, Chris. So this has been a relationship that we've been cultivating and developing over the past 2 years. I first sat down with Ironman Properties, which they're incredible men. They're men of faith. I think they're going to do what they say. And that's not only me saying that. I've asked other very highly respectable individuals that know this small development company, and that's the same thing they say. This has been a relationship we've been cultivating over 2 years. And what I told Mike and Joe, where I said, listen, I said, we're getting ready, and this was 2 years ago, to go through our downtown revitalization planning process. I don't want any of us to make any hair trigger decisions here. So let's see how this process goes. Let's see what our plan calls for as put together by our community stakeholders, and let's see if we have opportunities for a development like this in the future. Our DRP, which can be found on our website, frankfort-ion.gov, it's about a 47-page document. One of the main things it calls for is it says to have a sustainable downtown to support our existing small businesses and to fill up our vacant storefronts, you need more people living in the downtown core, residing, being in our downtown core. So once that DRP was officially verified and accepted, we got back together with these developers and we said, okay, we've got a plan that the community supports. Let's talk about a deal. And they were immediately taken with Frankfort. They had watched our progress over these past couple years. They knew they had a community they could invest in that would in turn invest more in our downtown to give them better opportunities to attract residents. And we talked an incentive package. Anytime you're getting a private developer to invest $7 million, they're taking a huge risk. If this doesn't work out, it's going to be them that are in the soup line. And so we are talking about doing a traditional tax abatement. Our finance committee right now of the council is negotiating this with legal counsel and Ironman Properties, and that will be presented to the council at our meeting in April. And then we are also using RDC funds, economic development bonds, to help incentivize this project as well. It's important to realize with the tax abatement that abatement is just on the improvements. So the existing revenue, tax revenue, that those properties they're developing are currently bringing to the city, we will not lose any of those funds. We are abating the improvements over and beyond the AV that's being taxed right now. And when I put pencil to paper and I run the property tax numbers that this development will be paying over the next 10 or 20 years, we will have made our money back that the city has partnered in about 5 years. We will have a complete return on our investment. And that doesn't include the economic spinoff of people going to Flavors Coffee House, going to Arnie's, going to Bridie's Bakery, giving other investors the confidence that if they bring a business to downtown Frankfort, that they're going to have 73 families with good paying jobs to pull from every day to buy their products. It's just very exciting. It's going to fill up a corner in our downtown square that currently needs a little tender loving care, and so it's going to add to the street appeal of downtown Frankfort as well.
And in terms of quality of life, my understanding is in a few months, the management of the Frankfort Hospital will transition to IU Health from St. Vincent Health Systems. When IU Health takes over, there's a question about where expectant moms from Frankfort will deliver their babies. How does that impact your mission to improve the quality of life in Frankfort?
Sure. So in the day and age that we live in, with modern science and technology being what it is, I think the rural healthcare system providing neonatal care, I don't know how realistic it is. Now, it's important to keep in mind that if there were an emergency birth to happen, that that birth will be handled at Frankfort. We will deliver babies in an emergency situation. But with mothers having access to healthcare like Riley Children's Hospital, IURNet on 65, when they have NICU capabilities that far exceed our rural healthcare system, mothers want to be where literally the top-notch, cutting-edge technology is. I believe we need a hospital here in Frankfort that if you need your appendix taken out, you can get that done. If you need your tonsils removed or a gallbladder surgery, you can get that done here. If you're having a high-risk pregnancy or you're dealing, heaven forbid, with cancer or open-heart surgery, and we have Methodist Hospital, IU Hospital, Riley, St. Vincent's Children's Hospital right down the road, I don't know how realistic it is to get patients to be here. I will tell you, though, that IU Health has given us the understanding that they're going to come in and make major investments in our current infrastructure. Right now, there's no privacy in our emergency room. We need a little updating in our inpatient rooms, in our OR suites. Just basically the curb appeal of the hospital, because healthcare is a business. You want to attract people in based on an environment that they believe they can become healthy and heal in. And I think IU Health is going to do that. And then another thing I love about them is with their connection to the IU School of Medicine, I believe that's going to be a huge plus to our recruiting capabilities of getting doctors to relocate to a smaller community to offer their services through our local hospital. So it's a very important part of the local economy, and I think IU Health is going to come in and hopefully take our hospital in the right direction. Actually, I know they will, and provide good service to our constituency.
Do you think that part of that investment and trying to maintain that level of services in all areas of medical care, is that maybe what caused St. Vincent Health to not renew its lease with the hospital there?
Well, and I want to be clear that this was a negotiation between the county and Ascension Health and IU Health. The city, actually, we had no official seat around the table. Now, because it impacted the city so very much and we had constituents concerned, the commissioners were wonderful in garnering my feedback. But what I can tell you of what I know from the process, Ascension Health was given a fair shake up front, and so was IU Health. And we just felt as though that IU could give us a greater assurance that they would come in and make a multi-million-dollar investment into our local hospital. I know that our county leadership, they visited Tipton, IU Healthcare Center, just right down the road from us in Tipton, Indiana. And what IU Health has managed to do there is just incredible. And they told us, what we did in Tipton, you can expect for us to do that in Frankfort, because this is the quality that we expect. We had executives, the CFO and Ryan Kitchell, around the table. I know the county, they love that. They were given assurance by decision makers. So all of these things played into account before the county finally settled in welcoming IU Health to our community.
Okay, in about 30 seconds, we don't have much time left, but you were one of the keynote speakers in the opening session of the annual Rhodes School at Purdue. What was the message that you wanted to give, and truly, in about 25 seconds, what's your answer?
Sure. It's all about quality of place, that infrastructure is incredibly important, and that our local communities need help. I face about an $11 million shortfall of bringing my roads in the city of Frankfort up to an acceptable level, that I appreciated the legislators' boldness and courage in facing this topic this session, and that all of the employees out there that work in infrastructure are an important part of the economic development backbone of our communities. But I'll end this with where we started: quality of place, the livability of our communities, our airports, our downtowns, our multimodal transportation networks, and attracting people to live in our cities. That's what's going to carry Indiana forward, and that's what we have to do.
All right. We'll wrap it up there. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your participation. If you missed any of this program, you can listen to the rebroadcast tonight at 7 on WBAA News. For Stan Jastrzewski, I'm Chris Morisi-Vitza.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.